You make a grown man cry.
Right.
You make a grown man cry.
Right.
You make a grown man cry.
Right.
Grab the oil, gasoline. I ride smooth. She's a clean machine.
This is the Quality News Network. Escalating violence in Iraq has gotten so bad the country's defense minister has declared Iraq in a state of civil war. Today, 25 Iraqis were killed in sectarian violence. Another 75 bodies were found dumped in Baghdad neighborhoods. This is the deadliest month for Iraqi civilians since April 2005. 1,370 people have died. Also in Iraq, a U.S. soldier and a U.S. Marine were killed this weekend. That makes a total of 47 service members so far this month. The Pentagon has laid out three options for the war in Iraq following a review commissioned by Joint Chief of Staff General Peter Pace. The first is to deploy more troops. The second is to reduce troops but stay longer in Iraq. The third is an entire pullout. In London, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said military victory in Iraq is no longer possible. He also said the U.S. must enter into talks with Iraq's neighbors, including Iran. In Baghdad today, Iraq announced it had reestablished relations with Iran after 25 years. Iraq's president will meet with Iran's president this weekend to discuss how to stop spiraling sectarian violence. In Washington, D.C., Congressman Charlie Rangel says he approves of reinstating the draft. He says the president and Congress would not have invaded Iraq had there been a draft. House Speaker-elect Nancy Pelosi says restoring the draft would not be a priority of the newly elected Democratic Majority Congress. In Huntsville, Alabama, a school bus accident today has killed three teenage girls. 30 students were injured, seven of them critically. The bus plunged more than 30 feet off an interstate overpass. In Santa Monica, California, an elderly man who killed 10 people and injured 63 after driving his car through a farmer's market will not serve prison time. The 89-year-old man received probation. The California Supreme Court today ruled for freedom of expression on websites. The High Court said sites broadcasting information produced by other parties have immunity from lawsuits for defamation. In New York City, an appeals court ordered a $1.93 billion increase in funding for New York City school system, that following a successful lawsuit on behalf of the city's 1.1 million students.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
In a move that could become a model for other states, California will attempt to protect marine life by restricting fishing along 200 square miles of the central California coastline. O.J. Simpson's publisher, Rupert Murdoch, has canceled Simpson's controversial new book entitled If I Did It. Simpson was acquitted of criminal charges in the death of his ex-wife and her friend. Birdseye has recalled 3 million packages of frozen cooked winter squash. Ammonia has apparently tainted some of those packages. In what's being called the largest private equity deal ever, Blackstone Group agreed to buy office building owner Equity Office Properties for $36 billion. The National Association of Realtors reported October home sales fell in 38 states following the downward trend of the summer. The hardest hit states, Arizona, Nevada, California, and Florida. Home prices were also down. Light sweet crude is trading at $59 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 26 points at 12,316. The Nasdaq was up 7 at 2452. The S&P 500 was down 1 at 1400. Also, gold traded at NYMEX at $623 an ounce. You can find more at qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Voodoo child, Lord, I'm a voodoo child.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning. That's right. It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and who expect working Americans to pay for their billionaires' gains. And now, brought to you by the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters, it's the Bruce Birch Radio Program with your host, Bruce Birch.
Well, the night I was born, I swear the moon turned
fire red. All right. Welcome to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. I'm Bruce. I'm your host. It's 5 minutes past the top of the hour. Glad to be back with you here at the start of this Thanksgiving week here in the United States. If you're from outside the United States, this is the week that we honor all of those Native Americans that we then tried to wipe off the face of the planet. Kind of a little bit ironic. A lot of stuff going on tonight. Last week, before I went into my weekend, I mentioned that I would probably be doing the No Child Left Behind tonight, and I will cover a little bit of that. But I'm going to try to spread this over several days, primarily because I want to try to find some NCLB, No Child Left Behind experts. And there's also some other stories that have come off the wire over the weekend that I think merit some attention. So I'm going to try to cover some of those this evening as well, and we'll do the No Child Left Behind thing. I think we're going to spread it at least over a couple days anyway. And we'll get into that a little bit later in the program. If you want to get in on the show today, this evening, tonight, you're always welcome. You know that, don't you? Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, right? Give it away. Well, the number to get in on the show is 1-877-443-2366. Another way to remember that is 1-877, the number 4, head on. And I'd love to hear from you. I don't know what you're doing this evening. I don't know if you're just hanging out on a Monday night, kind of recovering from the weekend. I'd love to hear from you. And whatever you'd like to talk about. But the first thing I wanted to get into was an incredible, wonderful, amazing editorial out of the Lexington, Kentucky Herald Leader that was actually posted. It's actually about a week old at this point. But I really want to read this to you because the folks on the right, they're grasping at straws. They can't figure out why it is that America refuted their winner-take-all, kill-them-all, sort-them-out-later, bomb the entire Middle East into a plate of glass mentality. And this little editorial, I think, will kind of typifies a lot of what I've heard from the right, and it's pretty interesting. It's called "Hippies Still Trying to Ruin the Country." It's by a person named Janine McBriarty, something like that. You can go to Kentucky.com and just go to the news editorial section, and you'll see this editorial. But I want to read this to you because I found it to be quite interesting, to say the very least. America won't win another war until the 1960s flower children are pushing up petunias. Radicalized, the flower children morphed into lefty loonies who now masquerade as social progressives. No matter what they rename themselves, however, their agenda hasn't changed. They still want utopia, and it wouldn't be worth mentioning except that their naivety has aged into a persistent denial of reality that may have devastating consequences. For example, consider their continued belief that America's armed forces are neo-Nazi stormtroopers who delight in burning babies to further the aims of imperialistic corporations. Such nonsense, now treated as legitimate by the left-leaning media, denigrates the patriotic values and sincerity of half the nation. It undermines the war effort, insults the dead and survivors of battle and their families, and supports the aims of the enemy. Translated into immigration or national defense policy, it is an invitation to the world to destroy our country. Yet this Vietnam-era fix about the military, despite 40-plus years of proof to the contrary, is understandable when analyzed in the context of the Flower Children's religious zealotry. To renounce their military fictions would mean facing bigger, more important truths. Marxism doesn't work. Love is not all you need. Western culture is worth defending because it protects freedom, tolerance, and the greatest material good for the greatest number. Government can't solve every problem. The American taxpayer has no obligation to support the rest of the world's exploding population. Without the military-industrial complex to blame for humanity's ills, the lefty loonies lose their basis for faith in a socialist utopia. Terrorism is torturous for them only because it forces them to pursue the political goals that will allow them to redistribute America's wealth by pulling the nation together and relying on the hated military for protection. Oh, the unfairness of irony. Thus, lefty loonies deny that terrorists have declared war on America while insisting that we can win the war through negotiation. They seem to believe the terrorists will spare them because they are nice. The truth is that there is no way out of our modern warfare dilemmas. Is it possible to protect non-combatants given modern weaponry in total war? Are people who make weapons innocent citizens of their warring governments or integral non-uniformed soldiers and legitimate targets? Must we surrender our country to our enemies because our weapons are too terrible to use? Whose life is more important, the 12-year-old Iraqi firing an Uzi or a soldier from Kentucky? Which is more sacred, a mosque hiding a weapons cache or a plane of tourists? Do we want a military strong enough to protect our homeland? Are we willing to pay the price of survival? It's crucial that we come to terms with war questions because we will have war with Iran and North Korea. It will come down to their children or ours, their soldiers or ours, their countries or ours. For aging hippies, it's easier to keep blaming old enemies than to confront new ones, especially the young and the ruthless. Hating a military-industrial complex is safer and less tiring. It's less complicated and less dangerous. Abstract institutions neither bleed nor shoot back. Demonstrations, marches, and sign-carrying doesn't accomplish much these days, but they are a lot more fun and allow the fiction of activist moral superiority to persist. Their ball, Buddha, Allah, Wicca, Lenin, is better than some old Judeo-Christian god. In their heart of hearts, lefty loonies do want America to lose in Iraq and every military theater. They want outside enemies to accomplish quickly the demolition of American capitalism using the violence the lefty loonies are too old, too scared, and too well invested to use. After all, lefty loonies want their social justice and their pensions, too. Luckily, no one lives forever. Luckily, there is Generation Jones to take up their slack. America is too great to go down without a fight. Yet please be compassionate toward aging, albeit dangerous, erstwhile flower folks. Understand their pain when communism failed. Understand their desire to enforce perfect harmony. Understand their insistence that we must love humanity except those in uniforms. Just don't vote for them in 2008. Yeah, that's Janine McBrearty. She lives in Lexington, Kentucky. Matter of fact, here's an email address for her. If you'd like to comment on her little tirade there, it's Janine, J-E-N-E-A-N, Mac, B, J-E-N-E-A-N-M-A-C-B, at hotmail.com. Send her an email. Let her know what you think about that editorial. and do use more than four-letter words. I just, you know, I'm reading this and I'm going through this and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, anyone who writes something like this and calls someone else a loony, well, we know what that did, what the truth is with that, don't we? All right, we're going to go ahead and let's see what we're going to do here. Hang on a second. I'm going to link to this letter in our chat room, and if anyone wants to go read it, you can actually click on the link for her email address. And if you're not in the chat room, well, go visit it. We're going to take a break. This is Bruce Birch for the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
To start to mold a new reality closer to the heart, closer to the heart.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
Welcome back to the program. It's about 18 minutes past the hour here on the Head On Radio Network. This is the Bruce Birch Radio program that you have dialed yourself into. Glad to have you aboard. I just read a very, just a stupid editorial from somebody named Janine McBrearty out of Louisville, Kentucky there. And you know, I just, upon further analysis, you know, she typifies a lot of what people believe about anti-war activism. Now, I am a child of the 60s, okay? I was born in 1969, and I don't really consider myself a flower child, and I don't, and my children, who are all anti-war, there's three of them, they will be hopefully carrying forward the torch of peace and justice rather than war and kill them all and let God sort them out kind of mentality. So, you know, Janine, if you're listening, which I'm sure you probably aren't, because, you know, it's probably past your bedtime. But, Janine, quick point of information for you, using a Robert's Rules of Order term. Quick point of information for you. People who are anti-war often breed more people who are anti-war, and so you'll never kill us all off. Just ain't going to happen. I also have another interesting announcement that I want to make this evening. And that is that United for Peace and Justice has now set a date for a massive anti-war march in Washington, D.C. The date will be January the 27th, 2007. And if you want to know more information about that, you can go to unitedforpeace.org. That's unitedforpeace.org. You go to that website, and right there on the front page, it says, bring the mandate for peace to Washington, D.C. on January 27th. On Election Day, the voters delivered a dramatic, unmistakable mandate for peace. Now it's time for action. On January 27th, 2007, we will converge from all around the country in Washington, D.C. to send a strong, clear message to Congress and the Bush administration. The people of this country want the war and occupation in Iraq to end, and we want the troops brought home now. So if you want to get involved in that, just go to that website, and there's all kinds of stuff you can do. You can help spread the word. You can make a donation. You can do a lot of different things. You can also buy David Rovick's new CD, and some of the proceeds from that will actually go to help United for Peace and Justice, the organization. I'll probably will announce that as we're going forward until that time. Maybe not daily, but every so often I'll bring that up because I think it's important. You know, this lady was talking about, I suppose it's a lady, Janine, this lady was talking about how anti-war protests do nothing. Well, what they do is actually quite a bit. Number one, in this country, our job as citizens is to speak out against a government if we believe that what it is doing is unjust. Or unjust, I should say. And so, first of all, it helps to, you know, any kind of peace rally or march of this nature helps to solidify the opposition to the war. Second of all, through media coverage, it shows people around the country that indeed they are not alone, that there are others out there who are against the war, who are against militarism, and encourages them to speak out in their own communities. A lot of, like for instance, the World Can't Wait organization, who sponsored October 5th walkouts and rallies all around the nation. At first, they had the first time they did it, they had something like 60 rallies. This past one, they had, I think, over 200. So it is growing. There is a growing, burgeoning movement out there that is in opposition to the Bush administration policies. Get on board. Get on board. I've got some music playing in the background. I don't know if you hear it. Anyway, the other thing, too, is there's another story that's out there that I wanted to cover a little bit later. But the first thing that I wanted to do is talk a little bit about just a real quick corruption watch, if you will. I'm sure everyone is aware at this point that Tom Noe, the GOP fundraiser at the heart of Ohio's biggest political scandal in a generation, was sentenced today to 27 months in a federal prison for illegally funneling money into President Bush's reelection campaign. I have his statement right here, and I'm going to read it to you before we go to our break. The statement is kind of interesting because he tries to shift the blame, as they always do. They never own up for their mistakes. He says, quote, I have pled guilty because I violated the federal campaign laws. In 2003, I was pressured by Bush-Cheney campaign officials to become a pioneer for George Bush. In order to do that, I needed to collect over $100,000 in campaign contributions. I knew the first step was to sell tickets to the Bush-Cheney fundraiser in Columbus, Ohio in October of 2003. I also knew that I had friends who would like to attend, and I wanted to help them attend. I knew what the campaign finance restrictions were. I also knew that I had given the maximum amount that I could give personally, so I recruited others to make contributions to the campaign for which I provided the funds. It totaled approximately $45,000. I knew it was wrong to do so. I alone accept responsibility for what I have done. I'm going to repeat that. I knew it was wrong to do so. I alone accept responsibility for what I have done. I am sorry for any hardship I have brought on my friends and family. Furthermore, Your Honor, Furthermore, Your Honor, I'd be remiss if I would not take this opportunity to thank a few people. Oh, my God. To thank a few people who have stood by my side throughout the entire ordeal. Now, I'm not going to go into who all he thanks. I think it's a laundry list. But he also thanks the court for being so just in finding him guilty. The scandal also attributed to the political downfall of Ohio Attorney General Jim Petro, who lost to Ken Blackwell in the Republican primary for governor. Ohio Auditor Betty Montgomery. It seems to be that there's a lot of Republicans in Ohio that got nailed by this. And, you know, what's funny about it is that corruption is the Bush administration's middle name. They live and they thrive on corruption. It's a crime family, as other hosts have indicated. And the reality is that this is one story out of probably who knows how many hundreds of stories of various people who funneled big money into the Bush administration campaigns. Now, I'm not going to spend too much more time on this because I just wanted to point it out because yet another story in a long laundry list of corruption that has occurred under this administration. You got the Jack Abramoff, you got the Duke Cunningham, you got the Michael Scanlon, you got, I mean, you just Tom Noe, you got who is the senator or representative from Ohio, Bob Ney. All of these folks, they're corrupt as corrupt can be. Okay, so we're going to do that. Let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break, and then when we come back, I've got a couple of other stories I wanted to run by you, specifically a new piece by Cy Hirsch talking about the next attack, the next warring faction that they want to try to pull on Iran. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. With all the attention the media has paid on the torture and abuse of prisoners overseas, we've been neglecting to admit one haunting fact: the way our country treats prisoners right here at home. Prisoners are held in isolation for months at a time. Prisoners are shocked with tasers and stun guns while they're handcuffed, or even while they're in restraint chairs. Prisoners are left in those restraint chairs or shackled to the floor here in the United States, sometimes for days on end, left to urinate and defecate on themselves. Fortunately, two judges in recent days have had enough and have cast a spotlight on these horrors. In Michigan, Judge Richard Allen Enslin ordered the state to stop using non-medical restraints in cells after a 21-year-old mentally ill prisoner, Timothy Joe Suiters, died naked and shackled to the cement floor, lying in his own urine after 4 days. The judge said Suiters' treatment amounted to torture. In another case, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that a Wisconsin supermax prison resembled a Soviet gulag if the conditions described in a case about inmate Nathan Gillis were accurate. Those conditions, wrote Judge Terrence Evans, included being stripped naked in a small prison cell with nothing except a toilet, forced to sleep on a concrete floor or slab, denied any human contact, fed nothing but something called Nutriloaf, and given just a modicum of toilet papers, four squares, only a few times. The treatment of our own prisoners should shock the conscience, not just of judges, but of all of us. We have versions of Abu Ghraib right here at home. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway Insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
That's right. 32 minutes past the hour. It's the Bruce Burch radio program here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to be back with you and glad for you to join me this evening, this Monday evening. I've got a piece here from Cy Hirsch that I wanted to bring to your attention. I don't know, I try to keep an eye on what Cy Seymour Hirsch from The New Yorker, what he writes, and primarily because he has been pretty much on the ball and pretty very correct on most everything that he has written, and he's one to watch. I mean, there's a lot of pundits out there. There's a lot of writers. There's a lot of journalists. Cy Hirsch, Robert Fisk are a couple that I admire greatly for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is that they really dig and that they really tell the truth that no one else seems to want to tell. Don't come up against the administration, you know. Don't ruffle any feathers. Well, these guys, these two guys, between the two of them, ruffle enough feathers that the entire administration starts going into seizures when they start talking. This latest piece by Cy Hirsch, which is in the New Yorker, was posted today on the website. There, it talks about that Cheney has pretty much said that should the Bush administration not get authorization from Congress to invade Iran, that they'll figure out a way to do it anyway. Now, Congress, of course, not only has the constitutional authority to declare war, but it also has the constitutional responsibility to be the fiscal agent, if you will, for any kind of military conflict. In the article itself, it brings up what happened with the Contras, in Nicaragua, the back in the '80s with the Ronald Reagan zap, and and how Congress basically unfunded supporting the Contras to destabilize the leftist Sandinistas. And essentially what Reagan then did, and his cohorts, of course, he says, I don't recall any of that. I was asleep at the time. Yeah, he was asleep at the switch. Anyway, what happened was they figured out different ways to fund the Contras, and it was, it was gun trading with Iran. You know, and who are we up against now but Iran? I can't help but think that it's going to be gun trading with Nicaragua. I don't know. I mean, it's just, the irony is written all over this. Point being is that Cheney says that basically they will figure out a way to destabilize the Iranian government. Of course, their reasoning is to keep Iran from getting the nuclear bomb. All right? They don't want Iran to have any nuclear technology, despite the fact that Iran has opened its doors, has asked for talks for probably a year and a half, 2 years now. The White House has refused to talk and yet beats the drums for war. So diplomatic solutions or diplomatic actions on the part of our government haven't occurred. I mean, they haven't even gone the diplomatic route. All they've done is spout rhetoric and claim, or talk about how we need to go and blow that country off the map again. Another country. See, it's the whole thing all over again. The entire Iran situation is Iraq all over again. However, if they think that they're going to be able to skate to a so-called military victory in 2 months in Iran, they are very, very sadly mistaken. See, this particular administration, yes, skated to a so-called military victory by crushing Saddam's troops, but they didn't prepare for the aftermath, which, of course, is the peace. You can win a war, but can you win the peace? They have not yet won the peace. The very presence of our soldiers in that country is a destabilizing factor for Iraq. I was listening to a gentleman from Iraq today on another radio program, and he was talking about how when people get kidnapped there, guess who does the kidnapping? It's not armed gangs like they would like to make you believe. The people who show up to do the kidnapping are dressed in uniforms, generally of the Iraqi police. So you don't know, as a citizen of Iraq, you don't know who to open the door for. You don't know when you see the police standing there if they're coming to tell you that someone in your family's been killed or if they're coming there to take you. You don't know. You don't know when you go down the street if you're going to find bodies laying all over the place. I mean, this is a reality in Iraq right now. You don't know when you go down the street if you're going to walk by a car that suddenly explodes and kills you. You don't know. These people are living in a constant state of stress, traumatic stress. They're watching their neighbors and their families and their husbands and their wives and their sons and their daughters getting blown to smithereens. Why? Because there is no order in that country. And based on everything that I've read, this administration, this Bush administration, does not want there to be any order. It is as if they are getting some sort of perverse pleasure or money or something out of the destabilizing factor in Iraq. And what does this do not only to the people of Iraq? I'm not even talking about what's happening to our soldiers who are going there. But the very presence of us there has really created just a vacuum of order, a vacuum of justice, a vacuum in their lives. Why? Because we keep pushing this thing called democracy, using the point of a gun to prod it along. And our style of democracy is not something this country has ever been used to. Now, we can't blame the Iraqis. We broke it. We own it. However, we can keep this same kind of situation from happening again. And I encourage you, if you have not read this article over the New Yorker, please go read it, because it is very in-depth and talks a great deal about what the next plans for the neocons is. Let's go over to the phone lines. Look, it's my buddy John from Down Under. John from Sydney, Australia. How are you doing this evening?
All right, mate. Does it feel like, second verse same as the first, or third verse same as the first? I mean,
yes, it really does.
And do you notice it in the article? I haven't actually gotten to read the whole thing quite yet, just because I've been kind of busy. But just kind of early on, Cheney makes this comment about the shorteners. Did you talk about this?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. And I did talk about that some, John. One of the, and I didn't use that term because that's their term.
Well, I mean,
just like this,
when he was a cable puller, back yeah. in his younger days, and basically, saying, copper was expensive, and if they had a bit that was longer than 3 foot, they needed to save it for recycling. So what did they do? Any bit that was bigger than 3 foot, they shortened it and threw it away, which just shows the mentality of dead-eyed Dick that he'll break the rules whenever it suits him.
Well, they don't believe the rules apply. They don't believe the laws apply. And what I was mentioning actually was the fact that if Congress doesn't, and this is what he's talking about when he says shortener, if Congress decides not to fund military operations against Iran, they will do an end run around that decision and fund it, however they want. So it really is. I mean, this is where we get into the sticky situation of whether Congress is the one that is the branch that should authorize war or not. I say yes. I think many more heads are better than one.
Well, and that's what I do believe the Constitution actually lays out. And in the situation of Iran-Contra, in the situation of Iraq, there has been no such authorization given by the body that is allowed to, and they go and sidestep once again. And you and I have been following Seymour really closely for a long time now, and he's been spot on accurate.
He really has been. And what I find to be just amazing about it is that about him, or just about his accuracy, is that he's always flown under the radar. Very rarely, I mean, every so often he'll go on to one TV show to talk about that the mainstream media doesn't want to hear from him, because what he writes is too close to the truth.
If past performance is anything to go by, we need to be one really on top of things. I'm going to look a little bit into this. I'm getting some notifications from Democrats Abroad, which is the expat political group, that there are now 31 congressional bodies or some such already pushing for impeachment by spring.
I've been receiving emails probably, I guess I would almost say daily now, John, of organizations that are really pushing hard for that. Pelosi, Conyers have both said it's off the table, but again, I think that what'll happen is it'll come in like a lamb and go out like a lion. Do you follow what I'm saying? There will be sort of a quiet investigative oversight. They're going to call them oversight hearings. And in these oversight hearings, Bob Wexler of Florida, John Conyers of Michigan, who's the fellow from California? I'm trying to think of his name. Who does the financial stuff. Anyway, those three guys alone have been amassing humongous amounts of evidence that against Bush. And so what will happen is they'll start pouring this stuff out, and there will be no alternative but to go for impeachment, I think, is what the end result will be, you know?
That's exactly was my thoughts, you know, when everybody kind of started, you know, kind of screaming and yelling that you know, Pelosi had pulled it off the table. I thought that was actually trying to play a little bit of smart politics going up to the election to avoid soundbiting that for political ads. And then, like you said, just start the hearings, start parading the skeletons out of the closet, and it's going to be the American people that are going to demand that impeachment be looked into again. And then the Democrats, in a way, are able to save face as a party, saying, you know, we didn't do this on partisan grounds. This is what, you know, due to what we have now uncovered, this is the only recourse that we have. And in fact, it's in the Constitution like three times, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is. And not only that, we're not talking about the definition of what is. We're talking about the definition of the separation of powers. We're talking about the definition, you know, the unitary executive theory that they operate under is totally against the Constitution. He does not have the right to create law by using what he calls a signing statement. I mean, we could sit here all night and enumerate the hundreds of things that he has done that warrant at least a trial, at the very minimum, a trial.
Absolutely, you know, and you know, Cheney's statements about, you know, if there's hearings, he won't testify. Well, that's an impeachable offense just to begin with. So all we got to do is stop him from flying out to the new Bush homestead in Paraguay, and you know, I'm sorry, man. You know, there's part of my brain that is just saying they're looking for a way out when, you know, the chips really start to fly.
I can just see him down there. I mean, you know, it's just like he puts on a little military uniform, and of course he doesn't ride a horse because he's scared to death of him, but he gets in his little Jeep and rides around the ranch and orders his little brown people around. I mean,
it's no cattle, it ain't a ranch.
That's right. And by the way, the guy I was talking about was Henry Waxman, my producer. Just
There you go. Thank you, Bob. Well, you know, I really think that, you know, everybody needs to have a real good close look at this Seymour Hersh piece, because just even from you and I watching him over the last couple of years, he has an insight. He is spot on. He has a feel for how this administration works, and a great sense of history and politics, to where, you know, like I said, every time he releases something, it's like, okay, I got to go there. Because it's just played out probably to 80% accuracy or better, as far as I've been able to tell. And you know, these folks will be held to account one way or another, but I reckon that they're going to fight everything and every way possible until they have no way out.
Let me read this to you, John. This is this pretty much talks exactly about how they're thinking, okay? It says, many in the White House and the Pentagon insist that getting tough with Iran is the only way to salvage Iraq. A Pentagon consultant has said, quote, it's a classic case of failure forward. They believe that by tipping over Iran, they would recover their losses in Iraq, like doubling your bet. It would be an attempt to revive the concept of spreading democracy in the Middle East by creating one new model state.
Oh, please. Please.
That's a hell of a gamble, man.
Well, not only is it a hell of a gamble, it's a losing bet, because we know that you cannot distribute democracy via the barrel of a gun or the point of a bayonet. It just doesn't work. It never will, you know. And I mean, down here, man, we have this idiot prime minister who just continues to kind of float along that everything's a beauty and it's all good, and any of you people that say otherwise, first of all, are dumb, is basically what he's been saying in the media. He actually said the other day, for those people who think that Iraq is a disaster, have no concept of what a disaster really is.
No doubt. There's another, you know, there's a couple other things I wanted to read, because I think this is kind of important. The consultant also said that the goal in Iran is not regime change, but a strike that will send a signal that America still can accomplish its goals. Even if it does not destroy Iran's nuclear network, there are many who think that 36 hours of bombing is the only way to remind the Iranians of the very high cost of going forward with the bomb and of supporting Muqtada al-Sadr and his pro-Iran element in Iraq. Now, couple that with this gentleman, Joshua Muravchik, who is a prominent neoconservative. He has written in the current issue of Foreign Policy that the administration has little choice. He says, quote, "Make no mistake, President Bush will need to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities before leaving office. The president would be bitterly criticized for a preemptive attack on Iran, and so neoconservatives need to pave the way intellectually now and be prepared to defend the action when it comes. It's a foregone conclusion in the neocon community, John, that this is going to happen." Just like that little editorial that I read from the Lexington Herald Leader, where this woman, Janine, what the hell is her name? Janine McBrearty says, you know, one little sentence in here that I thought was very interesting. She said, where is it? Oh, it says, "It's crucial that we come to terms with war questions, because we will have war with Iran and North Korea. It will come down to their children or ours, their soldiers or ours, their countries or ours." So the neocon message is that this is going to happen. You might as well get used to the idea, because we're going to do it, period. And Dick Cheney, in this article, is also saying, well, if Congress doesn't fund us, then we'll figure out our own damn way of doing it. We're going to do it regardless.
Well, I think it was at Think Progress on a post where they linked to this new Hirsch piece. They also had video of Hirsch on some program, and he was saying how for many, many years now, the administration and Israel have been saying that Iran is 1 year away, 1 year away, 1 year away, 1 year away. And it's this constant, just around the corner kind of talk. But if they were 1 year away in 2003, that would mean that they'd have a bomb now. But there's no signs of that. So, we got to look at the way they speak. It's never in any kind of real defined terms or fact. It's always this kind of assumption that they'll have the capability sometime soon, sometime soon, sometime soon, sometime soon. And it, you know, if you actually pay attention, it just does not wash.
Right, right. Well, you know, John, and you know, you and I, when we did Fourth Estate Radio, we were talking about the fact that Iran has been open for talks surrounding their nuclear program for a couple of years now. They've been open for talks. Robert Gates, who is the nominee of choice to head up the Defense Department now, has indicated that he's willing to go to the table. And, you know, what's interesting, the dynamics that are involved in that are pretty interesting. The reason why is because Gates is basically the messenger boy of Papa Bush, Brent Scowcroft, and James Baker, who all three are rejecting Cheney's, decisions and influence over George the Younger. So, you know, Gates is kind of going to, he's going to go into this position basically at odds with the current administration in saying that we need to try diplomacy first, you know, because the reality is that, you know, I mean, yeah, we could bomb them for 36 hours, but let me tell you, the minute we start bombing Iran, we will have incited the next world war. That's the way it's going to happen.
No doubt about it. And, you know, Iran's population might not be able to compete with the United States, but they have a whole lot more of their population that are ready to fight. And we do not have the capability, you know, and I mean, I don't even, you know, I just think all the talk is absolutely insane. And, you know, I think one of the things that we have to accept if we're actually going to ever get out of this quagmire in Iraq is that we're going to have to bring Syria and we're going to have to bring Iran into the conversation because they have play in the region. And we have, and the only winner so far in the Iraqi war has been Iran.
Well, and not only that, you're absolutely right, but not only that, John, is that if you deny, let's put it this way. Let's say you're standing in a schoolyard and you have a couple of kids over there that want to be on the team, or they want to be at least on one team or the other, okay? But both teams are ignoring them and saying that they're not worthy to be on either team. What are they going to do? They're going to start to try to prove that they're you know, able, willing, capable of being on one team or the other. All right? And that analogy, if you will, is sort of what I apply to what's going on in the Middle East right now, especially with Syria and Iran. They want to be seen as realistic world stage players, and they are. I mean, every country, in my view, every country is, and that's what the UN is all about, is a level playing field for every country to be able to come and air their grievances and, you know, and whatnot, and try to keep, you know, military conflict from happening. Instead, what has happened is that the UN has become very much a pawn of U.S. foreign policy. And, you know, the right says the UN is nothing more than a debating club. I say that it really is. I mean, that's sort of like a misdirection, when in reality, you know, whatever we ask for, we get pretty much, and you know, from the Security Council. So it's kind of ridiculous. What we need to do is bring Iran, just like you said, bring them to the table. You know, say, you know what, you're absolutely right. You have the right to be players in the world stage, and you know, and but you know, but there need to be some. Also, I got to say this, John. There needs to be some reasonable expectation of confirmation. You know that. That there isn't, you know, that their nuclear technology is safe, I guess is the best way to put it. Am I against Iran getting a bomb? I don't know. You know, I really can't answer that right now because I haven't read up enough of their intentions to say yes or no. But I do believe that, you know, that the technology itself at least needs to be secured so that, you know, the lone terrorist or terrorist organizations don't get a hold of this technology and can create a bomb and then, you know, in the name of Allah or in the name of Jesus Christ, whoever, you know, bomb the hell out of somebody else and send shockwaves around the world.
Absolutely.
And you know what?
You know, yeah.
We're getting ready. We're going up on a hard break. You want to hang over until after the top of the hour?
Oh, why not? It's been a while since we've done this.
All right, well, listen, this is the Bruce Birch Radio Program, and we're going to take a break for the news here very shortly, and when we come back, we'll get back into this conversation about Iran, Cheney, the insanity of people who shoot others in the face, quack, quack. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Escalating violence in Iraq has gotten so bad the country's defense minister has declared Iraq in a state of civil war. Today, 25 Iraqis were killed in sectarian violence. Another 75 bodies were found dumped in Baghdad neighborhoods. This is the deadliest month for Iraqi civilians since April 2005. 1,370 people have died. Also in Iraq, a U.S. soldier and a U.S. Marine were killed this weekend. That makes a total of 47 service members so far this month. The Pentagon has laid out three options for the war in Iraq following a review commissioned by Joint Chief of Staff General Peter Pace. The first is to deploy more troops. The second is to reduce troops but stay longer in Iraq. The third is an entire pullout. In London, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said military victory in Iraq is no longer possible. He also said the U.S. must enter into talks with Iraq's neighbors, including Iran. In Baghdad today, Iraq announced it had reestablished relations with Iran after 25 years. Iraq's president will meet with Iran's president this weekend to discuss how to stop spiraling sectarian violence. In Washington, D.C., Congressman Charlie Rangel says he approves of reinstating the draft. He says the president and Congress would not have invaded Iraq had there been a draft. House Speaker-elect Nancy Pelosi says restoring the draft would not be a priority of the newly elected Democratic Majority Congress. In Huntsville, Alabama, a school bus accident today has killed three teenage girls. 30 students were injured, seven of them critically. The bus plunged more than 30 feet off an interstate overpass. In Santa Monica, California, an elderly man who killed 10 people and injured 63 after driving his car through a farmer's market will not serve prison time. The 89-year-old man received probation. The California Supreme Court today ruled for freedom of expression on websites. The High Court said sites broadcasting information produced by other parties have immunity from lawsuits for defamation. In New York City, an appeals court ordered a $1.93 billion increase in funding for New York City school system, that following a successful lawsuit on behalf of the city's 1.1 million students.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
In a move that could become a model for other states, California will attempt to protect marine life by restricting fishing along 200 square miles of the central California coastline. O.J. Simpson's publisher, Rupert Murdoch, has canceled Simpson's controversial new book entitled If I Did It. Simpson was acquitted of criminal charges in the death of his ex-wife and her friend. Birdseye has recalled 3 million packages of frozen cooked winter squash. Ammonia has apparently tainted some of those packages. In what's being called the largest private equity deal ever, Blackstone Group agreed to buy office building owner Equity Office Properties for $36 billion. The National Association of Realtors reported October home sales fell in 38 states following the downward trend of the summer. The hardest hit states, Arizona, Nevada, California, and Florida. Home prices were also down. Light sweet crude is trading at $59 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 26 points at 12,316. The Nasdaq was up 7 at 2452. The S&P 500 was down 1 at 1400. Also, gold traded at NYMEX at $623 an ounce. You can find more at qualitynewsnetwork.com.
It's time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
Welcome back to the radio program. It's 5 minutes past the hour. You just heard the news there, the Quality News Network, Annabelle Lund, doing a fine job, as usual, of taking care of our needs with the news. Now, let's go straight back to the phone lines. Our good friend John has been carried over from the break. John, are you still with us?
Hey, mate. Well,
I'm amazed
that you know we're in a situation again. Like I said when I first rang in, you know, third verse same as the first. That, you know. Are the American people and the world population going to fall for this same stovepiping of bad intelligence again? You know, are we going to run into the same problem over and over again?
I think we might. I think we might. I think if they... Well, you know, another interesting story that sort of... I mean, you know, you watch as this stuff gets ramped up. Right. One of the stories that I saw this evening, and I don't see it now, we talked about that Iran had chemical weapons.
Really?
Yes. And I'd like to know. I'd like to have. I can't find it now, but it sucks too. But you know, I'd like to know. You know, we had this whole thing over the last 4 or 5 years of these packaged news stories. I wonder how much of those stories that came out about all of the chemical war weapons that Saddam had, all the biological weapons that he had, and the fact that he was pursuing, or the perceived fact, the assertion that he was pursuing nuclear weapons. I wonder how much of that was actually planted.
Well,
rather than it being true.
Well, our producer also, you know, says he thinks that they do have them, but they developed them to use against Iraq when Iraq bought them from the U.S. Now, are these ancient leftovers from another time? You know, and the other problem that you run into is you know, the boy who cried wolf kind of situation. At least with me, you know, it was all bogus when it came to the claims about Iraq. What makes that I'm supposed to believe it this time around? And that could be really dangerous as well.
Yeah, and you know, you're absolutely right. It's a morass of problems. My only hope is that the Congress can... You know, when they take office, if Bush does not, you know, they're doing a huge buildup right now in Iraq, which I talked about way back in September, that around this time, around the beginning of December, middle of December, there was going to be massive redeployments, and actually those stories have already started coming out. There was a story about a National Guard unit, I think from Texas, the irony there, going back to Iraq for its third tour. Now, you know, the reason why I even said that is because, you know, why would they want to send more troops over there if they're not building up for a military offensive?
Well, and there's supposedly some reports floating around, and I don't have them in front of me, so... You know, you have to take this with a grain of salt, that we've already been, you know, that possibly Australia, the United States, and the UK already have been running operations inside Iran as, you know, pretext, which we were doing ahead of going into Iraq. You know, we were trying to egg Saddam on by, you know, bombing raids and whatnot before the declaration of war, which never really happened, came through.
Yeah, and, it's insane.
And Bob, again, you know, I was thinking this myself, you know, one of the underreported facts from Iraq was that, you know, if Saddam had these chemical weapons, they were so old, because they have a finite shelf life, that they would have been completely unusable. You know, that this isn't, you know, something that you can stick on the shelf for all time and pull down. You know, it has a shelf life. You know, so, I mean, just because someone might have the remnants of something from decades past doesn't mean that they're a viable threat now.
Of course it does, though, John. In the neocon world, everything's a threat. Be very scared.
Yeah, us loony lefties.
The only thing to fear is everything. if you're not
Bob,
scared, you're not paying attention.
Hey,
you
man,
know, these people, it's crazy.
Well, you know, the flip side of that statement you just made, you know, there's that song from slipping me at the moment, Casey Chambers, if you're not pissed off at the world, you're not paying attention. And I really do subscribe to that. And, you know, just again, you know, I'm not going to take up too much of your time, but we really need to stay vigilant on this repeat of the stovepiping and the shortcutting of American law when it comes to declaring war on other nations and this whole concept of the preemptive strike. You know, Iran has done nothing to us yet. And, you know, we have destabilized the region so badly, you know, we turned a blind eye to the war crimes of Israel against Lebanon, and now you actually have Hezbollah calling for a challenge of the Lebanese government when before Israel went through the last illegal run of bombings, you had a very, very young and fragile democracy that was making strides and trying to deal with Hezbollah because they did represent a certain part of the population and had served that population in more humanitarian needs than anything else. And because of the actions of Israel and us turning a blind eye to it, we have now turned Hezbollah back into showing some of its militant side as opposed to its protectionist side, which it had turned that direction. And we have now, you know, so we've turned Iraq into a quagmire. We've got Iran and Syria being held out of the conversation. We demonize Iran, and we've destabilized Lebanon, who was really, really making strides towards a stable democracy, but it was so fragile. And we let Israel bomb water infrastructure, electricity, hospitals, all these things that are war crimes, and said, well, you know, it's just Israel.
Isn't it funny? They voted for their own leaders. And yet we didn't recognize them. I never have gotten over that one.
Well, they didn't vote for the leaders that we wanted. And with that, Bruce, I'm going to let you go, mate. I know you're coming up on another break. Great show, man. And we just, you know, everybody go and read. And I still have to finish it, this Hirsch piece, because I almost guarantee you, unless something gets in the way of Cheney and his PNAC buddies, it's going to play out like a script. Like almost every other piece he's done in the last few years has.
I hope that Seymour's wrong, but I dare say that he hasn't been wrong yet. And you know. So, but we had to bring it up. The bottom line is that if we don't make this stuff known, what happens is people get seduced by all the rhetoric and all the negative crap that gets flying around, and you know, the reality is that Iran has been asking for talks throughout this entire period. We are the ones who have refused to come to the table.
Absolutely, man. With that, I'm going to let you go. Great show, Bruce. Great to speak with
you.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, you too, John. That's our good friend John from Down Under in Sydney, Australia. John and I used to do a radio program called Fourth Estate Radio. The archives are at the WhiteRoseSociety.org website, WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can check that out. We did a pretty tight show there for a while on Saturday nights, and then I took a weekly gig and couldn't keep up with it. Wonderful, wonderful guy. Now, he does a show on this network on every afternoon, I think from 5 to 6 or something like that. I think so, yeah. It's called Foxed Up. You should check it out right here on the Head On Radio Network, 5 to 6 Eastern Standard Time. That would be 2 to 3 West Coast, and you can figure it out for everywhere else. Let's go ahead and take our break. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program. I'm Bruce on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know what you
want? Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's 19 minutes past the hour here in the second hour of the radio program. Glad to be back with you. I did talk about, I said chemical warfare. I was wrong. I meant germ warfare weapons. Apparently, today in Geneva, Switzerland, the U.S. delegation head, John C. Rood, of the Convention on Biological Weapons said that Iran probably has germ warfare weapons, North Korea may have developed them, and Syria could have carried out research into such banned weapons. He is the head of the United States delegation to the Convention on Biological Weapons that's going on right now in Geneva. Perhaps not right now, but today, yesterday. Rood said, quote, "We believe that Iran probably has an offensive biological weapons program in violation of the BWC, which is the Biological Weapons Convention." He also said, quote, "We believe North Korea has a biological weapons capability it may have developed, produced, and weaponized for use. Finally, we remain seriously concerned that Syria has conducted research and development for an offensive biological weapons program." Now, both Iran and North Korea are members of the 31-year-old BWC, and Syria has signed on but has not been ratified. There was no immediate comment from any of the three states, but in the past they have firmly rejected such allegations. The conference, which is held every 5 years, will review the working of the 155-state treaty, which prohibits the development, production, and stockpiling of biological and toxin weapons, and will seek to agree a program of future work. Now, for his part, John Rood, the Assistant Secretary at the Bureau of International Security and Nonproliferation, he declined to detail his accusations against the three states. He referred journalists to the August 2005 report by the United States on various countries' compliance with the BWC. The U.S. has in the past accused other countries, including Russia and China, of not fully abiding by the treaty. So basically, whoever our opponent is at the time, that's who we accuse, right? Sounds kind of like that might be the case. So that's the newest story that is down the wire. Again, what'll happen and what is going on right now is that they will probably try. Oh my God, that's a bad joke, Bob. What is going on is that the news stories will begin to come out. First, it'll be the biological weapons, then it'll be the chemical warfare weapons. And then it'll be what else is left? Weapons of mass the nukes. They're gonna get the nukes. We don't want there to be a smoking mushroom cloud before we act. First verse same as the second, or second verse same as the first, or something like that. We're hearing the same drum beats all over again, and it looks like the media is playing right into their hands. You know, and it is absolutely repugnant that what we have in this situation is really the United States taking the lead in trying to create more instability in the Middle East. Now, what you know, the question is, ladies and gentlemen, the question is, maybe you have an answer for this, one of you. The question that I would like to ask is, who benefits? And how much from all of this? Is it a money issue? Certainly could be, based on Halliburton and Dick Cheney and his deferred stock options. Is it a power issue? Or is it really what they say it is? I mean, these people have lied to us from day one, and it's hard for me personally to take the answers that they're giving and saying this is absolutely the truth. They lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They lied about finding so-called chemical weapons factories. That was all a lie. That Colin Powell went before the UN and said all of this stuff is in Iraq. All of it was a lie. Every bit of it was a lie. And Colin Powell himself went on TV with Barbara Walters and said it was the low point of his career that he did that. Now, for its part, Iran has decided it's going to invite the Iraqi and Syrian presidents to Tehran for a weekend summit with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Bilal Talabani, the Iraqi president, has accepted the invitation and will fly to the Iranian capital on Saturday. All three countries intend to hold a three-way summit among Iraq, Iran, and Syria to discuss the security situation and the repercussions for the stability of the region. A spokesman for Ahmadinejad said today that Talabani's visit was scheduled several weeks ago. However, Hassan Kazemi Kumi, the Iranian ambassador to Iraq, also said that Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian president, would be in Tehran to attend the talks as well. So, you know, the Iranians, for their part, are trying to rally around the countries that are there. Now, let me ask you, here's another question. You know, a lot of questions tonight, eh? Here's another question. If our presence in Iraq is so destabilizing as it is, could anyone in their right mind say that invading a much larger country with a much better practiced military force, a much larger population and much more ground to try to secure, could anybody in their right mind say that this is a noble thing to do? Well, I certainly hope not, because if you do, you're out of your freaking mind. And that's the truth. Now, having said all of that, apparently we talked the other day about a couple of issues, labor-related issues. We'll get into that after our break. One thing that I wanted to bring up to your attention as well is that it has been revealed, and this is going to be a huge story, that Barack Obama smokes cigarettes. Oh my God! Oh, that was me coughing. Excuse me. Barack Obama apparently is a cigarette smoker. Isn't that terrible? After all that we've talked about with Iran, we find out that Barack Obama is a smoker. I'm thinking that him and Laura Bush must be getting together and sharing Camel Lights. I'd like to know what the brand is. Me, I'm a Nat Sherman fan. I like to smoke Nat Sherman cigarettes and cigars. But I just think it's funny that, in all the things that are going on, now he has even admitted to saying, yes, he messed around with marijuana and maybe even a little blow, as in cocaine. But the more interesting story is that he's a cigarette smoker. That's crazy. This is the Bruce Burch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for the last half hour of the show. If you want to get in on the program, it's 1-877-443-2366. I'll be right back. Building, memories of it still keep calling.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights, meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also listen to over at progressive.org. You didn't hear much about global warming during the recent elections. I know Iraq was topic A with good reason, but there's no reason why global warming should have been topic Z. We're destroying the world's environment, and Bush hasn't done jack about it except to pull out of the Kyoto Accords and to call into question the scientific consensus about global warming. The U.S. spews out 25% of the world's emissions of greenhouse gases, and we're fast reaching the tipping point where rising temperatures will be all but impossible to stop. Right now, the U.N. is meeting in Kenya to discuss what to do. And Kofi Annan was absolutely right to excoriate the United States by implication for its frightening lack of leadership on this issue, though he denied he was pointing fingers at Bush. Bush's representative in Nairobi, Paula Dobriansky, said with straight face, "We think the United States has been leading in its initiatives on global warming." That kind of Republican leadership was epitomized by Senator James Inhofe, who's been chairing the Environment and Public Works Committee. He's called global warming the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. Thankfully, he won't be heading up that committee come January. Barbara Boxer will. I'm hoping she can help bring action and bring it fast. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back to the show. This is the Bruce Burch Radio Program. It's about 33 minutes past the hour. Glad to have you back on board. And a couple of things I wanted to run to you. One of them in particular is we talked on Thursday. I had a conversation with our good friend Wayne, who is a union organizer up in West Virginia. And we talked a little bit about what was going on at the Smithfield plant in Tar Heel, where there was a walkout by the majority of employees. Let me read this to you. Thanks to the determined workers at Smithfield's plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, who bravely took a stand for their rights, and to the thousands of supporters who stood up for justice by calling and writing Smithfield to protest its treatment of employees, Smithfield agreed to the workers' demands to halt the firings of employees and to reconsider its implementation of immigration policies in the plant. The walkout generated thousands of calls to the company from national religious, civil rights, and immigrants' rights organizations, as well as individual supporters, demanding that workers' rights be respected. Organizers included the National Baptist Convention, the Progressive Baptist Convention, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the North Carolina NAACP, the National Council of Churches, and Rainbow Push. Eric Schlosser, whose new movie Fast Food Nation opened this past weekend, issued a public statement condemning the company for its victimization of the workers. Following the walkout, the company agreed to negotiate around the workers' issues through the Catholic Church and its attorneys. Church that has attorneys. The company acknowledged that it had misinterpreted the law and agreed to make appropriate adjustments to comply. For the first time, Smithfield also agreed to meet with a group of workers elected by the workers themselves to further negotiate about plant issues and employee concerns on Tuesday. Specifically, the workers and the company have already agreed to the following. Number one, Smithfield has agreed to increase the time allowed for employees to respond to no-match letters from the Social Security Administration. In other words, if there is a they give a Social Security number and it's not it is found to be fictitious or it's found that there's no match in the Social Security Administration database. Number two, employees who have been laid off for failure to resolve Social Security issues may return to work while they sort out these issues. Number three, Smithfield's Human Resources Department will designate a staff member to help process those Social Security issues and respond to questions. Smithfield has agreed that if mistakes have been made, they will be addressed. No disciplinary actions of any kind will be taken against those employees who participated in the walkout. And Tar Heel plant manager Larry Johnson will meet again with a group of Smithfield employees tomorrow, Tuesday, November the 21st. So if you did make that telephone call like I asked you to do last Thursday, guess what? It made a difference. Now, following that line of reasoning, since we're in some labor stories, I have another one that I wanted to run by you. And that is down in Houston. I talked about this a little bit also the other night. Houston janitors, who were only making something like $20 a day, they have reached a tentative agreement for a 3-year contract for janitors. Now, Chevron was the company that was being such a crappy organization and hiring these folks and paying them $20, I think it was a day. It was really crazy. All right, here's the tentative agreement. Wages, there will be a $1.15 an hour increase the first year, $1 the second year, and 50 cents the third year. In health care, the third year is when single-payer health insurance will kick in and janitors will pay $20 per month into that plan. It is a plan designed and managed by the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, and they're hoping to get all of their members nationwide on the plan. They'll get 2 weeks of paid vacation every year. They'll get 6 paid holidays every year. Their hours, the first year, everyone must work a minimum of 4 hours a day. Second year, everyone must work a minimum of 5 hours a day. Third year, they need to work a minimum of 6 hours a day. And they have a grievance procedure in place. They have protection for all of the striking workers to get their jobs back with no discipline. They have a disciplinary procedure in place so that no one can be illegally fired for no reason any longer. And I'm thinking that the SEIU probably will make a press conference about this, but the reality is that those janitors now, there was also a huge brouhaha over the weekend where there was some strikers that were actually run over by policemen on horses, and there's a YouTube video floating around out there. You can go and probably find that. Just Google Houston janitors video, perhaps, and you can find that video, and you can watch as these Houston police officers who were trying to arrest these Houston janitors, you know, who were only making $20 a day, they're trying to arrest them for standing up for their rights, trying to arrest them for, you know, trying to create a situation that people would notice what's going on rather than brushing over it with a minimum of concern. And there were a couple of people that were actually stepped on by these police horses who were trying to corral these people off the street using horses. Real, real bright. So there you go. Two major labor-related stories where there has been some positive movement forward. And I can't help but think that because of the newly elected Democratic Congress, that those companies are going, uh-oh, we better start acting right, or we're going to be finding ourselves in Congress facing, you know, facing an inquiry. Now, also, and I wanted to bring this to your attention, Michael Richards. Did we talk about Michael Richards today? I hope somebody did. This guy flipped out on stage at the Laugh Factory in West Hollywood and basically called some black patrons who were there in the audience the N-word over and over and over and over and over, and then went on to say just some things that were just really crazy. I mean, just absolutely crazy. He said, "Oh gosh, I can't remember exactly how he put it, but he said that's why that's what happens when the black man doesn't like the white man, or so I forget what it was. It was just absolutely huge racial epithets." Now, he apparently went on David Letterman a little while ago this evening, and perhaps you will tune into this. He says, quote, "I am not a racist. That's what's so insane about this." So if you, of course, after the show, go check that out. You know, even Jerry Seinfeld has waged in on this. I don't want to even talk about this too much more except for to say that, you know, you cannot, I mean, anyone in a public position cannot come out and say, you know, some of these, say these things and get away with it easily. You can't get up and call people the N-word on the stage repeatedly, and expect people to be okay with that. You can't do that. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, that's the only entertainment story of the day that I was going to offer up to you. And now, and absolutely, yes, my producer's saying, who's happiest about this? Mel Gibson. And I actually saw an online poll today that said, who's a bigger racist, Michael Richards or Mel Gibson? And I clicked Mel Gibson. Now, anyway. Now, the other thing, too, that, let's see, I was going to another story. John McCain is still trying to keep himself out in front of the public eye. The Selective Service has come out and said, quote, "We are the fire department, and we stand ready to send people into war against their will." The chief, the spokesman, Pat Schuback of the Selective Service headquarters in Arlington, Virginia, in response to Democratic Representative Charles Rangel, who says that we need to institute a draft, says, quote, "We're prepared to do the mission with whatever time period we're asked to do it in. Our current plan is 193 days, and that was based on manpower analysis. They have an active list of 15 million names, and they say that about 93% of all men in the United States between 18 and 26 have registered for the Selective Service as is required by law." And I remember when that was passed into law, because I had to go down and sign up, and I didn't like doing that, didn't want to do it, felt like it was bull, but I did it anyway because I didn't want to go to jail. There have been a number of reactions from military-age men, and, you know, just the reality is that I don't think this is going to happen, but it's another point to make is that there's a lot of ramping up regarding Iran. It is absolutely repugnant. This is the Bruce Birch radio program. We're going to take our last break of the evening, and when we come back, we will, we'll try to, you know, finish out the show. If you want to get on the show, you still have a few more minutes. This is the Head On Radio Network. The number is 1-877-443-4444. 2366.
Universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI. It was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online. And even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL. Whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Back on the Bruce Birch Radio program. It's about 48 minutes past the hour. One more protesting situation that every year happens in Georgia that I wanted to report on and give you an update. 22,000 people protested this past weekend at the gates of the School of the Americas, which is... At Fort Benning, Georgia, and among them, you know, it's just amazing. Every year it grows. Every year it grows down there. I had the opportunity to attend that demonstration once, and it is absolutely needs to happen. The School of the Americas, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know what the School of the Americas is. The School of the Americas is basically where it was moved to Fort Benning from Panama in 1984. The school trains Latin American soldiers, police, and government officials. Okay? So basically, they go there to learn how to control their nations. They go there to learn human rights abuses. They go there to learn how to be despots. how to control those angry leftists. Thousands of demonstrators paraded, chanted, and raised white crosses Sunday outside the Army's Fort Benning as they continued a 17-year-long effort to close a military school they blame for human rights abuses in Latin America. Catholic priest Reverend Roy Bourgeoisie says this is about men with guns. He spent 5 years as a missionary in Bolivia and founded the group School of America's Watch in 1990 in the effort to close the school. People of these countries are hungry, he said. You can't eat guns. You can't eat bullets. They want food and medicine. They need schools for their children. Officials with the Muscogee County Sheriff's Department estimated the crowd at 14,000, but Eric LeCompte, the events coordinator for the SOA Watch, said they counted 22,000. 16 demonstrators, including two grandmothers, got around, under, or over three chain-link fences, one topped by coils of barbed wire, and were arrested for trespassing on military property. They could each face up to 6 months in a federal prison and a fine of up to $5,000. Among the demonstrators were toddlers led or carried by their parents, senior citizens, Catholic nuns and priests, and military veterans. Others included members of a group called 1,000 Grandmothers and a civil rights group known as Living the Dream, dedicated to the Reverend Martin Luther King's dream of a unified, nonviolent world. Living the Dream ended a week-long pilgrimage from Selma, Alabama, at the three-day demonstration, which concluded Sunday after a solemn procession honoring victims of murders, assassinations, and other human rights abuses allegedly committed by Latin American soldiers. The demonstrations are timed to commemorate six Jesuit priests who were killed along with their housekeeper and her daughter in El Salvador on November the 19th, 1989. Some of the killers had attended the School of the Americas. The military has acknowledged that some graduates committed crimes after attending the School of the Americas, but says no cause and effect relationship has ever been established. The new Western Hemisphere Institute, as it's now known, has mandatory human rights courses, but the demonstrators contend changes at the school are only cosmetic. Close it down. We don't need to train sociopaths in how to be sociopaths now, do we? Yes, death squads are up. I want to tell you one last thing before we head out this evening. And that is that despite all of the rhetoric and despite all of the negativity and despite all of the trying to control the media and the trying to control the conversation that's going on around the country regarding the war in Iraq and the their perceived impending strikes on Iran, you and I can still make a difference. And how we can do that is by calling our legislators. How we can do that is by reminding those Democrats that we elected them and that we expect them to hold this government accountable for what it's been doing. How we can do that is by attending the United for Peace and Justice rally in Washington, D.C. on January the 27th. You know, we can also do that by talking to our neighbors and to the people that we go to church with and to the folks that we know might have similar political ideas. It's important to create a conversation that is focused on peace rather than on war. I dare say that the very survival of you and I depend on that. And to the people like Janine McBrearty, who call us loony leftists and leftover flower children, I say this. progressive change in the United States has always occurred, despite the nasty little rhetoric of people like you. We have moved forward despite all of the cries to the opposition, or by the opposition. We have always created peace where there was war. And we've done that because Americans know democracy itself is a peaceful institution. It is definitely not a warring institution or a violent institution. It shouldn't be. Although there's plenty of violence in our past and there's plenty of violence in our future, the reality is that those of us who believe in the ideals of democracy also believe that nonviolence is the way to go. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this evening. It's been a wonderful little excursion down the progressive path. I'd like to thank my producer, Bob. I also want to thank my announcer, John, who was on the show this evening for quite a while. I also want to thank Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services for being our IT professional, our good friend and chief head-on headlines news blogger, Gene. He's our news ninja. Hi-ya! And to all the folks who do the blogging, I know that there's also Susan. Thank you very much, Susan. To all the mods in the chat room, thank you for everything that you do. And also to the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights and to the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. You guys are amazing. You're building the American dream. You're creating community, and you're helping us do the very same thing. And last but not least, thank you, listener, for joining me one more time for the Bruce Birch radio program. And remember, it's your democracy too, and it's not a spectator sport. So get out there and make a difference. It matters. I'll see you tomorrow.
Was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, prison doors swung open, mothers hugged their sons, the Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air, and Mumia and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square, and they talked about what they do now after the revolution. Debts were all forgiven in all the neo-colonies. Soldiers left their bases, went back to their families. A non-aggression treaty was signed with every sovereign state. All the terrorist groups disbanded with no empire left to hate. And they all started planting olive trees after the
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The Washington Post reports the Pentagon has laid out three options for the war in Iraq following a secret review commissioned by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The first option is to put more troops into Iraq. The second is to reduce the size of the U.S. force but stay longer in Iraq. And the third is to pull out of the country entirely. President Bush said today he hasn't decided whether he will send more troops to Iraq or reduce the size of the force. He wrapped up his week-long trip to Asia with a six-hour stop in Indonesia, where he was greeted by thousands of protesters. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said in a British television interview Sunday that military victory in the war in Iraq is no longer possible. He also said the United States must enter into talks with Iraq's neighbors, including Iran. The Associated Press reports that Iran has invited the Iraqi and Syrian presidents for a weekend summit next week. They're expected to discuss how to stop the spiraling sectarian violence in Iraq. Syria's foreign minister was in Iraq this weekend for talks. It's the first high-level diplomatic contact between the two countries in nearly a quarter century. In Iraq, violence has claimed the lives of 48 Iraqis today. The Iraqi death toll so far in November is at least 1,370, according to the Associated Press count, making it the deadliest month since the tracking began. Today, Democratic Representative Charles Rangel, the incoming chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, has brought up the idea of reinstating the military draft. Steny Hoyer, who will be the next majority leader in January, said, quote, "We did not include that," end quote, in next year's legislative plans. Numerous polls have found that most Americans, about 7 in 10, oppose bringing back the draft. A school bus accident in Huntsville, Alabama today has killed at least three teenage girls. 30 students were injured when the bus reportedly plunged headfirst more than 30 feet off an interstate. The U.S. Coast Guard reports it seized a homemade submarine off the coast